Bill and I have done a premium episode. That's right, the first premium episode of the Dad Podcast. If you want to listen to it like it was old school, or if you're an old listener who misses our dear friend Bill Glass, all you got to do is go to thedadpodcast.com, click on the store tab on the homepage, and that will take you to a spot where you can download an MP3 version of 1 hour and 20 minutes of Bill and I doing old school funny. We talk about his kids joining the soccer league. We talk about his parents. We get an update on them. And then we talk about my experiences with preschool. So please check that out at thedadpodcast.com. Then click on the store and pick it up for just $3. You guys who have been listening to the show forever know my love for Naptime Radio, the wonderful ladies. Everything that you love about this show, plus they also offer information with their power naps. They did a great one recently about terrible twos that I learned a ton of. So please, please check out these fantastic chicks over at naptimeradio.com. They're available on iTunes, Stitcher. In fact, they are listed on the What's Hot page on the Kids and Family because they went weekly and they have a shit ton of listeners. So why don't you become another part of that ton of shit? You know what I mean. It's a good thing. Check them out. Naptime Radio. I love these chicks. It's everything you love about this show, plus information. Welcome to the Dad Podcast. This is episode 43. We are back with our good friend, Dr. J. How are you, Dr. J?
I am absolutely terrific. How are you, Justin?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. You were just saying right before we turned on the microphones that you had a bout of food poisoning.
Yeah. Yesterday, a little bit of puking overnight and then diarrhea throughout the day. And yeah. I don't know which one of the little bastards got me, but I will find out and I will have my retribution.
So now you're saying it could, because that's the other thing that I've recently, we've talked about it, you and I, even before on the show, that that preschool seems to be just a crucible for a child's immunity system more than it is educational. Like it just is supposed to get them ready to fend off illness when they get into an actual full-time school. And I don't know how anybody who works in a pediatrician's office does not get sick every 3 days. Is it because you guys also have a steady immune system?
I tend to fight off just about everything. It's amazing the things that come in that I don't catch. But this one could have been food poisoning, but that stomach bug is still going around. It comes at Thanksgiving when everybody brings family and friends from different towns, yep, different states. They sit together, have a meal, share their germs, and we don't get rid of the puking bug till April when we open up the windows again. So
this is so – you blow my mind with all this stuff that is so, like it's so – Here's the thing, is that it seems so like, no shit, but nobody would ever think that everybody gets sick. There's this trend of getting sick around Thanksgiving because everybody descends and, you know, plays that movie Contagion in their own house.
That's right.
Oh.
Grandma's licking her fingers, going in for, another piece of turkey or something, and it's nasty.
Yes, the Dad Podcast, ruining family holidays for all.
That's right.
Next Thanksgiving, everybody's going to put on a glove. Glove it up, Grandma. Get that
Have
bitch.
Have some Purell on the table.
Get that bitch out of my stuffing.
can you Purell your hands before you pass me the potatoes?
Oh, yeah. And yesterday I had a day. This is my new thing because we've, as everybody, I'm assuming, all parents have gone through, because my doctor explained to me, our pediatrician and my physician said that this is the worst like cold and flu season they've seen out here in Southern California. I don't know if it's the same on the East Coast for you guys.
I don't know. As long as it pays the bills, it's good enough. That's how I look at it.
Well, then she said that it's also leading into the worst allergy season, like coming off of this cold season, for whatever reason, it's making allergies even worse too. And I just,
do you remember having allergies when you were a kid?
No.
No, I don't either. What's up with all this allergy stuff?
Yeah, I don't. My dad's prescribed to the philosophy that allergies are in your head. That was his thing. I know that my grandma has a story of when I was about 8 years old, I blew on a dandelion and my face just puffed up 15 minutes later. And I had bronchitis stuff, but nobody ever told me I had any kind of allergies, or that was never
ever brought up. And that is an interesting thing that I think that it's an unfortunate negative of us becoming self-aware as parents about our children, that we're also aware of their illnesses. And I heard
never took a medicine as a kid for itchy, watery eyes or runny nose. You know,
right.
Just I toughed it through the day.
Yeah. And you're a doctor. I mean, do you think we're making it worse for ourselves long term by medicating these things, or do you think it's six one, half a dozen the other, or hard to tell?
I don't know. I mean, if a kid needs a medication that costs $2 a pill a day to make it through third grade, I guess it's worth it.
Yeah, and the whole peanut thing, like I've heard a story that they came up with this paste to help feed hungry villages in Africa, and it was predominantly made of peanuts. And so they had this American journalist that was asking the person well, how do you deal with peanut allergies? And he just kind of stopped and goes, you know, that's not really an issue here. And so yep.
Isn't that strange? Yeah, huh?
I don't know if it's because they don't have an option. It's just, like, here's the thing. Here's what I think it's like most things. I think that there are people who have genuine, like, I need to carry a fucking needle with me if I sniff a peanut. But
right.
Then there are people that are just kind of, you know, these people, they carry dark clouds. They're not really hypochondriacs. They're a different kind of hypochondriac where it's just, there's always something wrong with them. And that's just how they've decided to live their life.
That's right.
Yeah. And so
they're now doing peanut desensitization. They never did that before, where you could go to the allergist and get gradually desensitized to peanuts. Not that you could ever have like peanut butter,
yeah.
But if you accidentally ate a peanut, you wouldn't die from it.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
The whole purpose of the desensitization. And these kids have to eat a peanut M&M every day to maintain their level of anti-allergy. I don't get it, but I read the studies and that's what's going on.
Oh, man. And you must deal with that a lot in your profession, where you read these papers that these guys write and it just looks like, really, you got a grant for this? Like, really, this is what happened? Like,
yeah.
Oh, that's amazing that is the prognosis. Like, as a layperson, I would think that it would be some kind of, you would imagine a centrifuge of some kind breaking down the fundamental proteins of a peanut that caused the allergy, and then you'd come up with some kind of influenza-esque, like, flu shot, like, vaccine, and nope, it's just a peanut M&M, guys.
That's all it takes, one peanut M&M a day to maintain it.
That and an apple, and you'll be perfectly fine.
I don't know.
Do you know?
It is a little crazy, though. Who knew we'd need metal detectors at schools and peanut butter detectors at schools when kids come through the doors? You know?
That's what I was so shocked about. I've heard people talk about how preschools don't allow peanuts. And my school, the kid that I like, they sent home a thing going, hey, here are some suggestions that you can use to vary your kid's lunch. And I look at it, and it was like all peanuts. Like, they love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Like, no shit, kids love peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But, and here's the thing I don't understand. Like, and I know that we're probably going to start, you know, treading into the territory of airline humor for comedians. But I don't understand how some flights don't allow you to eat peanuts because somebody has a peanut allergy on the plane. And that's their way of, but yet nothing stops me from going to the Hudson News and buying a half a pound bag of honey roasted peanuts and just bringing it on myself. Like,
there you go.
So what difference does it make? And then how is it that these people can, that people could bring dogs on more than any other time? And yet I could be allergic to dogs and or cats, but nope, fuck you. That's not a big deal.
That's right. It's you know what it is? It's all just making things look like we're trying.
Yeah.
That's all. We're trying, okay?
I guess, don't you wish that when they did that then, that it would just be juggling? Like, I wish it would be something that they would just, you know, juggle five flaming bowling pins and go, look, listen, this is what we're trying to do. But they didn't actually fuck with your actual day or what you enjoy as a person. Like, that would be a nice enough sign of effort. Like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a little close-up magic. And that's going to be me and my customer service, and that's how I'm going to help you.
And that's sometimes all it needs to be.
That's what I think. That's what I think. Well,
people got to have their Benadryl. Benadryl's a better antihistamine than anything else, but it makes you sleepy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's like what we did with my kids is that everybody thinks we're crazy, but like one time he just wanted to have a peanut, so I just gave it to him. And even my wife had a little bit of like, oh, no, well, we don't know if he can't have peanuts till he's this age. And I'm like, well, if it touches his mouth, he gets all puffy, we'll slap some Benadryl in him and take him to the doctor. If it doesn't, then they'll probably go, yeah, he's okay or not.
I go, that's exactly how we do it.
Yeah, it's not like Like, to me, I just feel like there's a day that this is inevitable. And it's weird that our society has come to a point where peanuts have become the equivalent to beer or Jack Daniels, to where, as That's a parent, right. you have to make a decision to say, well, it's much safer for him to try his first bit of alcohol in front of me where I can contain it. And now there's conversations like, well, when we're trying to decide, Jim and I are trying to figure out where and how we want to give him his first peanut and just the how, you know, because it's a sensitive thing. And like, I imagine 200 years from now that's going to be a new part of the bar mitzvah.
Try the first peanut at the bar mitzvah.
It's going to be some kind of age of ascension into man where you're going to read from the Torah and then have a peanut and then step on a glass or whatever it is.
Well, the state may have to determine that 16 is the right age to introduce a peanut, much like the driving age. Well, just say no peanuts till 16.
Yeah. That's going to be some kind of government mandated thing of some kind. You know what?
These kids can't even go to circuses, you know.
Really? Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, because they're everywhere.
The first night of the circus in Hartford is always a peanut-free circus night. They sell no peanuts. There are no peanuts. So if you got a peanut allergy, you better get your ass in there the first night. You're on your own after that.
Yeah, otherwise you're hosed.
Right.
Oh, man. I'm serious. I'm right here trying to figure out what I did with the questions that we had for you. Here's one. I have one of them.
All right.
That was pretty long. This one
says, multifaceted. It has a number of questions in it.
Yeah. This is my now 6-year-old son has started passing out. Is that the same one you're looking at?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So far, we have miraculously avoided any concussions from this, mostly due to a very nimble school secretary who I bought roses for. He had shoulder dystocia?
Dystocia.
Dystocia and needed some resuscitation when he was born. He's always been my pukey kid and made me pukey when I was pregnant with him. He also had ear tubes when he was 3. Other than that, no health issues. Now, I'm just curious, what is shoulder dystocia?
When they have a big baby that can't fit out of the birth canal, they get hung up by the shoulders, and sometimes they actually will have a break in their collarbone in order to get the baby's head out of the mom's vagina. Sometimes they get hung up there because of the shoulders.
Oh, wow. I know that I got stuck at my shoulders, but they just grabbed the little tongs and just gave a little tug is what they did.
Forceps.
Yeah, and that's what my dad called them, the jaws of life. He goes, they grabbed them and just gave a little yank and you came spilling out like a cow. My dad's a
some kids can have shoulder dystocia, and it can affect their brachial nerve, and they can sometimes have weakness on one side if the shoulder gets – because I think it's called an Erb's palsy, where they can have, like, muscular weakness on one side because of the shoulders getting stuck when they're born. But doesn't sound like that's the case with this kid, though.
Yeah. She says, I've had 6 documented concussions, at least 2 before 4th grade due to accidents. And she's talking about herself. And the rest is high school because I started passing out. Only when I was doing something normal and sometimes when I was already sitting, but never when I was highly active. I was diagnosed with vasovagal syncope. Did I say that right?
Vasovagal syncope.
What is that?
That's when you stand up real quick from sitting or laying down and your blood pressure doesn't keep up with you with the change in position and you pass out because of a drop in your blood pressure.
So this is what Southern people would call the vapors then?
Yes.
All right.
The vapors.
That resulted in a systole?
Asystole.
Is that like some kind of asshole disease that I think it
is? No, that means your heart stops beating.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and the tilt table that she talks about next, it's interesting. When people have this vasovagal syncope, they put them on a table and they change their position. They almost put them upside down. And some people have seizures. Some people, I guess, can have asystole on the tilt table. Those are, you know, significant vasovagal syncope people.
So essentially by her being inverted, her heart just will stop.
Yes, their blood pressure drops so quick and the heart stops, yeah.
That brings a whole new level to roller coasters. Like that's
right.
That's a new level of adrenaline she must get.
She must stay off roller coasters.
We always figured that mine was caused by a nerve misfire that was damaged by the original concussions. Could this be genetic? Should I worry, take him in for a tilt table test, or just deprive him of roller coasters and becoming an airborne ranger, or just wait and see like the pediatrician that saved his life says?
Right. That's, I mean, it's, they're, they, they treat kids that have the vasovagal syncope with sometimes with a steroid medicine that they take every day that helps to keep their blood pressure up a little bit. And tilt table tests, the cardiologists don't like to do them if they don't have to, because people have seizures and their heart stops. So it's not a test that they want to, you know, do every day at the office. So most of the time with this, we just have them, you know, drink plenty of fluids, make sure that they're doing salt, because in old people, if you give too much salt, it gives high blood pressure. But in young people, if they have salt, it just gives them blood pressure, which is good. And salt and fluids usually helps. And if that doesn't, sometimes they'll use a steroid medicine to help keep the blood pressure up a little bit. But it can be dangerous, you know, because people, you know, have to get up from sitting and laying down. And it's funny, she says it never happened, you know, when she was active, which means it's not a heart thing, but it's a blood pressure thing.
Yeah.
And it may or may not have been, you know, as she said, could it have been, or it might have been caused by the concussions that she had. But honestly, I mean, I see kids who have vasovagal syncope that never had a concussion. So in terms of genetics, I don't know the answer to that question, whether it runs in families or not. I haven't seen that. You know, if I have a kid in the practice with it, generally their siblings don't tend to have it either. So I don't know if it's something that gets passed on or not, but again, you know, watching and waiting and seeing what happens, as a pediatrician said, is probably the best thing. And, you know, doing a tilt table and making a diagnosis, only if he is, you know, passing out a lot and getting hurt in those situations.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I was going to say, seeing a cardiologist is probably the first step, if that was something she was interested in investigating.
Yeah, because I'm curious about this, because I can understand why it would be frustrating as a parent, because it seems like it doesn't seem like it makes the doctor – it takes away the doctor's credibility, I imagine, for a parent to say, hey, my kid's dealing with these issues, and then you're like, well, let's just wait and see. Like, and that – you know what I mean? I'm sure that you could understand why that wouldn't be very reassuring.
Is it any worse than what I say to them? Make sure they stay hydrated and eat an extra little bag of potato chips every day. Is that bad advice to give? Because that's what I tell them to do. I mean, I say, you know, they need a little extra salt. Oh, but I don't like potato chips. And well, then you can have two pickles every day. That's the extra amount of salt you need. But that's what you do. I mean, kids grow fast. I mean, I don't know how old. Well, she said six, but I see this a lot in adolescents where, you know, they'll grow 3 inches in a year and their heart has to pump 3 inches higher to their brain than it did the year before. And if they don't keep up on their fluids and their hydration and their calories, they're going to pass out. And I get a call at least once a month from a school nurse at 9:30 in the morning about somebody who just dropped at their locker because either they didn't have a good breakfast and didn't have a good dinner the night before. And that stuff happens all the time.
Yeah. That happened to me when I was also in high school, but it was again, stupidity that I didn't have very much for dinner the night before. And then I just had like a glass of orange juice, I think, for breakfast, 'cause I was a dumb teenager old enough to where I don't think it's unfair for my parents to have an expectation of being able to take care of myself, and yet young enough to not know any better. And so I just started feeling faint headed, and then I passed out at school, and I think I had a blood sugar level of 42 or something is what I remember the guy in the ambulance saying. And so they gave me some orange juice and a sandwich at the hospital. And my dad was trying to, it's always funny when you get to see that level of the parents. I imagine you mostly see the parents in their putting their happy faces on, because we're at the hospital in the ER, and he's like looking at me going, you just cost me $100, you son of a bitch. And I can see the look on his face, but he's like, he's smiling at me, you know.
As you're sitting there eating your prescribed sandwich and orange juice so you'll feel better and go home, Dad. It's a $100 sandwich, son.
Exactly. And he's like, and so he was cool, but as soon as the doctor left the little curtain, he's like, what the fuck are you thinking? I go, well, I was just hungry, and I don't know. And he goes, well, just have a glass of orange juice, you dumbass. What is your deal?
That's all it takes.
Oh, my poor father. But so I just, so I'm clear, because this the vasovagal syncope, that's like a shoulder issue, right?
Nope. Has nothing to do. Shoulder dystocia is the shoulder issue.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. And then this issue is
passing out when your blood pressure doesn't keep up with your change in position.
Got it. All right. Well, she has another question about her other child. She says, my now four-year-old daughter has been getting this horribly raised red and painful rash that appears on the back of her thighs. We have tried several rounds of climatrozin steroid cream.
Yep.
And antifungals at no avail. We think it's a gluten allergy. If she eats gluten for 2 days in a row, it seems likely the rash will appear. So we try and keep her gluten-free, figuring somewhere along the way she will find a Cheerio under a desk at preschool and eat it. Should we take her in for the horrible allergy testing or just let her learn the consequences of sneaking forbidden foods? Are the cases of anaphylaxis shock due to gluten like there are for, say, peanut allergies?
Gluten is, again, it's a protein in wheat, so any kind of protein you can have an allergy to, but usually with gluten, it's not the kind of allergy that you have like with peanuts where you get hives and stuff like that. Celiac disease, gluten causes the small intestine to get flat so it doesn't absorb calories, so you lose weight and you get the shits whenever you have wheat. So it may not be the gluten itself. It could be the wheat that the kid is allergic to. Any part of the wheat you can be allergic to. So I haven't seen kids have anaphylaxis to that, but I do see them get itchiness and get hives. And kids, little kids especially, will get eczema, you know, dry skin patches and stuff like that. So I'm not sure if that's what she's describing here on the back of the thighs, but antifungals usually aren't going to do much unless you have ringworm, and that doesn't sound like ringworm. Never heard anybody getting a ringworm from gluten either, so
yeah.
I guess you take that off the list.
That's the part that's weird for me, is that it's on the back of the thigh. Not that I'm a doctor, too. I hope you don't mind that
should have this listener send in a picture of the rash, and we could actually use some visuals next time. I could take a peek at it.
All right, please do that, Heather. Email a picture of the rashes. Unfortunately, you will have to feed your daughter a pizza in order to
beforehand
a couple
the night
days.
Before, yeah.
But if you have one on hand, please do send it if it comes in again, and we could take a look. Because, the reason I say this is not because obviously I think I'm a doctor too, but is there some kind of rationale? Like, here's what happens when my kid gets a rash. I look at where it is and what comes in contact with that area first. If it's all over his body, then I kind of go, okay, it's probably something that they ate. But if it's in an isolated area, to me, it's more likely that it's something exposed to that area. Am I crazy?
Right. No, I think you would be right about that. But kids who have, all right, say for instance, you have a 4-month-old that's being breastfed. Mm-hmm. They got breast milk, but they're actually being exposed to everything that mom is eating. So if mom's eating peanut butter, if mom's eating eggs, if mom's eating wheat, the babies that have allergies to these things get dry skin from head to toe. I mean, they look like lizards.
They're
so cracked and scaly and stuff. So any baby any baby under 6 months who has bad dry skin, that's usually an allergy to something that they're ingesting. And if they're breastfeeding, it could be anything in mom's diet that they're ingesting. So sometimes we'll put moms on a, you know, restricted diet, no milk, no wheat, no eggs, no peanuts for like a week or two to see if the kid's rash gets better. But almost all of those kids have to go to the allergist and suffer what Heather says here, the horrible allergy testing.
Yeah. Why is it horrible?
Horrible.
Oh, okay.
If you have a suspect, I mean, if she thinks it's wheat or gluten, you know, they would just do a skin test against that and see if they reacted. So it's not even a needle. It's like they put a little drop of something on your skin and then they just scratch it with a little kind of prick thing.
Yeah.
And it just introduces it into the top of the skin. And if they react to it, then they're allergic to it. So it's not horrible. And if the rash is recurrent and really bothersome, they probably should have an allergist take a look and see. Then they know to avoid it.
Yeah, because I had one as an adult. Is it the same kind of thing? They have all these little, it was like, it seemed like 10 and 10, and they put them on the inside of my forearms.
Right.
And they just press it on there, and it didn't really hurt, but it was had these little things that just kind of agitate my skin, and then like a poison dart on a frog kind of situation.
Exactly.
And then you just sit there for 15 minutes, and then you come back, and then you have 3 or 4 red dots, and those are the things, based on the size of the hive, those are the things you're allergic to.
Right.
So is it the same for kids? Is that what she means is like the horrible allergy test?
Yeah, it's not that bad.
Okay.
It's exactly that.
Okay.
She should have it done probably.
Yeah, just to be safe. Because, that's what's interesting is that it's on the back of the thighs and nowhere else. So, but again, I'm not
weird.
A doctor.
And the fact that it's painful too is interesting. But yeah. She doesn't say if it's itchy or not. Itchy would, you know, be more allergic. Painful, I don't know what to make of that. Yeah. Send a picture, Heather.
Okay. This next one comes to us from a dad. It says, I have a few questions to choose from, all newborn related. I won't be offended if none are used. Don't worry. My four-week-old doesn't sleep at night and can't be woken up during the day. It's getting old. How can we reverse this? Is colic a cop-out excuse for pediatricians who just don't know what's wrong?
Oh, we should probably answer these one at a time.
Yeah, exactly. I just noticed that. So how can they reverse?
The first We've one, talked about sleeping. Four-week-old that doesn't sleep at night. Well, four-week-olds don't sleep at night. What do you want? You didn't get the memo? I mean, Jesus Christ. No. Sleeping through the night or sleeping at night isn't really an age-related thing. It's more a weight-related thing. Kids will start sleeping restfully through the night once they hit about 11 to 14 pounds or so.
Oh.
So if you've got a little four-week-old that's 8 pounds, I mean, I'm not surprised if the baby's waking every 2 hours at night to feed. During the daytime, I always tell parents you try to feed them every 2 to 4 hours during the day. And if at 3 hours they're not waking up, you try to roust them, you know, cold washcloth to the head, undress them, open up the windows and, you know, let the light in and try to get them to eat. If they go 4 hours during the day, they're not going to go 4 hours at night. They're going to be up every 2 hours at night. So kids aren't even really able to get on any kind of a regular schedule till they hit around 8 weeks of age anyhow. So depending on when this question came in, if it was a couple of weeks ago, kid might be 6 weeks old now and starting to sleep a little better. So yeah. I hope that's the case. But but you can't really reverse it. And trying to get the kid on any kind of a schedule before 2 months of age is really a waste of time because they hit growth spurts at 3 weeks and 6 weeks of life. So anything you get used to for the first couple of weeks gets screwed up that third week growth spurt. Then you kind of say, oh, fourth and fifth week, this is pretty easy. And then all of a sudden they hit another growth spurt at 6 weeks that fucks everything up again. So you kind of got to wait till 2 months before you can really rely on them to nap at a certain time or go to bed at a certain time and sleep a long stretch at night. So just a little more time and wait.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because I had another Facebook friend that was announcing that she was having issues with her like 3 or 4 week old too about not sleeping at night. And I was kind of like, it's my understanding that the first couple months, 2 to 3 months, it's figuring everything out, that it's all going to be crazy and chaotic and you just got to build yourself into a routine. And I suggested, of course, that she listen to our fabulous podcast episodes.
Right.
And I even told her about the book that you recommended, which, by the way, if anybody is looking for that, there's on the dadpodcast.com on the links tab, there's a link directly where you can buy that book through Amazon from that's the Dr. Ferber book that you recommend.
Solve Your Child's Sleep Problems.
Yeah. So and that's the same thing as clicking through our Amazon banner. So if you want to pick that book up and you click through the links, then we get a little kickback for helping
nice.
Sell a book. And let's see. So we talked about that. Is colic a cop-out excuse for pediatricians who just don't know what's wrong?
It's interesting. Colic, by definition, is a baby that cries for 3 hours straight, 3 days a week, for three straight weeks. Not many babies are going to satisfy that criteria.
Yeah.
A lot of them cry. But the ones that cry straight for no good reason for 3 hours, at least 3 days a week for 3 weeks, are few and far between.
Right.
But I just read an interesting article about colic because we always blame it on digestive problems and assume it's a stomach ache and mm-hmm. things like that. And there's some new evidence coming out that it might be actually related to migraines. They find that a lot of babies that have colic as they get older have a higher incidence of migraine headaches too.
Oh,
so
wow.
that there's some evidence that maybe some of this colic could be headache related too in little babies. So they don't really know for sure, but they're still looking at it. But they all tend to outgrow it at some point.
That's really interesting.
Parents get gray hair and are sleep deprived, but you know, they tend to outgrow it.
Yeah, because we had a situation with Jacob, my older son, that when he just out of nowhere just started crying constantly. He was the most content baby you'd ever come across. We did the Baby Wise method, and we're real big fans of that. And so he was just fine, and then out of nowhere just freaked out on us. And right. so we're sitting there, and we're looking through what to expect when you're expecting, and all the or the what to expect right. in the first year, I mean. So right. we're trying to figure out, because I and she's like, well, I think he's just colic, because everything he was doing was where they said, like, he might fart and then go back to sleep, and then he'll right. wake up and scream and then fart and then go back to sleep.
And but, don't we do that, too?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just life, you know?
I know there are many a nights when I wake up and fart and cry. So
I fart and it wakes me up.
Yeah.
And I have to go back to sleep.
But anyway, the so I just told her, I said, and this story makes me sound like I'm amazing and a baby whisperer, and that's not the point of it. The point is that I just feel like sometimes this is what I like about BabyWise. I was telling my friend. BabyWise to me gave me like a pattern, right? It gave me a bar, and then it anytime my kid and it created a settled, calm kid, and then anytime my kid deviated from his behavior, that meant that there was something going on that either he had developed something new, like developmentally, or there was something that new was introduced into some situation. Like it just made it a controlled experiment, is what I felt like.
Right.
And so that's what I liked and I loved about it, and that he's just started freaking out of nowhere. And I said, dear, he's been fine for like 3 or 4 months. And then out of nowhere, he just goes nuts. And we checked teething and it wasn't teething. And so she's
it's
looking.
It's always teething, buddy.
Well, here's what it was. We found out it was that she looked deep, deep in the book. She said that she found something that caffeine can cause colic-like symptoms. And so she goes, but I've only had like one Dr. Pepper or whatever. Or she'd had a Dr. Pepper that day, like a big one. But she was always having like a small glass because that's what the nurse told her she could have. And I said, and I told her, I go, well, let's think about when this happened. I said, what, or no, we did it. It was the opposite of that. I said, what were you doing 2 weeks ago? Because literally this started 2 weeks ago. And she's like, well, we did this and this. And then she goes, and she was just, we were just going through our day. And she goes, I baked those cookies. And I said, wait a minute, how many of those cookies are you having a day? And she's like, I don't know, 4 or 5, something like that. And I go, well, the cookies have chocolate in them. And she goes, yeah. And I go, well, you're also having your half glass of Dr. Pepper, right? And she was like, right. yeah. I go, well, you're having a lot of caffeine. And that's when she looked through the book and she said that caffeine could cause colic-like symptoms. I go, well, here we go. And then I go, wait a minute, haven't you also been having ice cream? And she was like, yeah. I go, what kind of ice cream? And it was cappuccino chip and double fudge brownie.
There's a little more caffeine going in than just that small glass of Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then that day, we tried to go to a Mommy and Me movie, and she had drank a 32-ounce of Dr. Pepper. And so all of a sudden, it just made sense. Now, again, I know there are moms out there that have, you know, have to have coffee, and they've done their thing, and their kid's been fine. But for us, it was obviously not the case because the next – so we pumped and dumped for 12 hours to get all that caffeine out of her system and used the frozen, as my friend called them, Utter Pops that we had and fed him that. And within 2-3 hours, he went back to his normal self, was completely, totally fine. And so I feel like that maybe there could be an example of what – he's saying
caffeine can actually there's a sphincter between the stomach and the esophagus that mm-hmm. Kind of closes off so that stomach contents don't come up into the esophagus and give you heartburn or reflux. And caffeine can actually cause that muscle to not work quite as well as it should. So having too much caffeine can actually weaken that little muscle there that prevents stomach stuff from coming into the esophagus and can actually cause, you know, more symptoms of heartburn and reflux too. So that we know. And that certainly could have something to do with it. I know from personal experience that a breastfeeding mom should never, ever eat Polish kobasi while she's breastfeeding because my wife did that once. And I can tell you 6 hours straight, my daughter was screaming and we were walking the streets of New Britain, Connecticut at 3:30 in the morning trying to get her to quiet down. She was in the car. Nothing worked until the kobasi was out of her system.
Because it just kind of agitated. Oh, and that's what I'm trying to say, too, is that I think while it could be a digestive, like it could be colic, I'm just saying that you might want to look at other things. Because like our friend, I've noticed it still to this day, she doesn't burp, like really solidly burp her son. And she had issues with feeding him. And he's grown out of it. Like now he's, you know, older and fine. But you got to really go after that kid, I found. You got to pop him good to get a good burp out of there.
And you got to get the air out from above. Yeah. Otherwise, it courses through the intestines and comes out the other end and causes all kinds of hell along the way. So
right.
But yes, you're right, you know, and the burp is important too. That's another thing for babies that are, you know, say bottle fed, you know, if the baby's really gassy, it's usually not the formula they're using. It's usually the nipple or the bottle they're using. And I tell parents, don't buy six of the same bottles and nipples, buy like two pair of three different bottles and nipples and experiment and see which one works the best for your baby.
Yeah. Yeah. I just had the urge to say, that's really smart. And then I realized I was talking to a doctor.
Every once in a while, I'll toss out a gem.
Oh, you must hate the entire world, Dr. J.
No, I don't, because, you know, unfortunately, that is what pays the bills.
Well, so. I know, but it's just funny that, again, I know I've said it on this show because it was one of my favorite things that I heard on Loveline so long ago, was that Adam Carolla was talking about how he didn't really graduate high school and just, you know, swung a hammer for the good chunk of his life. And he could walk into a multi-million dollar home and say, you're going to need to do this, 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 and we're going to rehang this door because it's not plumb. And then the guy would look at him and go, okay. And that same guy could go see Dr. Drew, and Dr. Drew could say, listen, you need to do this and this to make your lifestyle better, make you healthier. And he goes, well, I'm going to need a second opinion. And I just think it's so funny that I feel bad about it for everybody, because I think it's a weird thing that we're wired to talk to doctors like, well, hold on a second there. Like, you're a witch doctor. Like, you're not.
Let me go home and check that WebMD, yeah. And then we'll talk. We'll talk again after I've done my research, because I didn't graduate from high school.
Yeah, exactly. This is another big one. I just talked about a friend of a friend about this very issue. Is giving a newborn a pacifier really that big of a deal?
No.
Yeah.
It's, well, you know what I say is, you have babies that just like to suck, and when babies are born, they have they get endorphin release in their brain when they suck, so they're almost born addicted to sucking. And whether they're sucking for food or sucking on a pacifier or sucking on their thumb or their finger, it helps to relax them. And when you're breastfeeding, especially at the beginning, you have those growth spurts at 3 weeks and 6 weeks. So sometimes you're not making enough milk to satisfy the baby. And sometimes you just need the pacifier to tide them over a little bit.
Yeah.
If babies feed too frequently, because babies will feed, I tell them every 2 to 4 hours, but if they're feeding every hour, hour and a half, they're not giving mom long enough to replenish their milk supply, so that you feed them every hour and a half. They're not getting enough milk. That just guarantees they're going to be hungry again in an hour and a half. And you could have some babies that are feeding 10, 12 times a day and are still hungry because they're not giving mom enough time to replenish the milk supply. So trying to get them to that 2 to 4 hour mark with a pacifier is a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody is going to have nipple confusion from using a pacifier until somebody invents a pacifier that somehow makes its own milk.
Yeah.
So if we give a pacifier to satisfy the sucking, it works. And I tell parents, they all should go in the garbage between 4 and 6 months when they start taking the pacifier out of their mouth and chewing on it and using it as a teething ring. Mm. Then it's time to go. But for the first 4 months, I think it helps a lot, especially if a mom is nursing.
That's interesting, because I have a 2-year-old and he still has a pacifier, but it's like his
don't tell me that, Justin.
I know.
Okay,
but I'm saying like I'm curious. Like, so is it? It's interesting because it kind of goes into my whole philosophy. What I was just about to say about the pacifier is that my friends have these friends that you know, they're kind of hippies, and it's one of those moments that I was so thankful I was raised by rednecks, because rednecks just they don't care about what is fancy. They just do what makes, you know, sense and makes things easy, I guess. And so if you tell a redneck family that you're not supposed to do a pacifier, they'll just laugh in your face. They don't care about the dental issues or anything you could possibly rationalize to them. They're just like, no, the kid's quiet and happy. Who gives a shit? You know, people did it for years. That's their philosophy. Well, these people, their idea was the only pacifier they were going to give their kid was their own pinky, like the parents' pinky. And as soon as my wife heard them say this, she's like, well, how are you ever going to put the fucking kid down then? There's no way you could put the kid down if that's your – and then that leads to parents being overtired because they can't, you know, do anything else except for hold the baby. And then the baby doesn't really get an opportunity to build some self-confidence of being on its own without being attached. And so then it just kind of creates this downward spiral for us. Now, I'm sure if you're of that philosophy, you have all these rationalizations and things that make you go, no, this makes sense because of this, 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 and this. But that's my thing, is that, so me, I was like, when my first son was born, I'm like, we're taking it away at a year. And then it got crazy And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. And that's, I guess, really what it all comes down to is that as a parent, you get kind of tired and you're like, well, fuck it. I'm going to take the easy way out on this one. Because if you told me I had to get rid of it at 6 months, I'd be like, oh, shit, man.
I put it in big, bold letters on my six-month-old little handout that I give. It says, tonight's the night to throw the pacifier out. Not tonight, not tomorrow.
Yeah.
Not after the next tooth breaks through. Tonight. And I tell them, make sure it's garbage night. Put it at the bottom of the garbage can at the end of the street so that you're not tempted to go out there at 3 o'clock in the morning out of desperation and just rip the Band-Aid off and deal with it.
I do love the idea of, like, suburban trash cans, like, the moms and dads dinging at 2 in the morning like they're junkies, you know?
That's right. What are you doing out here? I'm looking for the pacifier, goddammit. The like, kid won't go to sleep.
Scratching at their elbows. Like, I just need one, man. I just need one.
And if you think about it, it's the parents that are addicted to the pacifier after 6 months, not the kid. The kid could have given it up. If you took it away for 2 days, they'd forget they had a pacifier.
Right. Well, it's the same thing as, like, what I learned with my second kid of laying him in his crib when he was awake to let him go to sleep on his own, is that it's easier when he's younger and doesn't quite understand the concept of you not being there or any of that kind of stuff. It makes total sense that at that time, I'm sure that, sure, it's hard for a few days, but long term, it makes it less of an issue where, like, now, if, say, my kid was 4 years old and had a pacifier and then I tried to take it away from him, there's going to be lots.
Deal.
Yeah, it's like there's going to be an argument and he's going to have abilities to come back and forth and, like, he's going to state his point and all this crap. Whereas 6 months, it's like, oh, I guess this is the way it's supposed to go. I don't really have a say in the matter because I can't really say any words.
Well, all I know is I have a box at my office of all the pacifiers that the 3- and 4-year-olds bring in to me.
Oh, really?
Because I tell them when they're 3 and still doing a pacifier, I said, you realize there's only so many pacifiers in the world. And if you're using a pacifier at 4, I got little babies out there. Little babies that need their pacifier, and they can't get a pacifier because you're still using them. So I make them come in with their little Ziploc bag full of pacifiers, and I throw them in my box. I have a box with about 60 old pacifiers in it, and I keep it there to show the parents. I say, see, this is what you got to do.
Yeah.
If after 6 months, then it's like there is no patch. There's no, like, stopping smoking, you know, Nicorette hat for the pacifier. You just got to take the pacifier out and not give it back. But then grandparents fuck it up because then they spend the night at grandma's house. The kid hasn't had a pacifier in 12 months. Yeah. And now all of a sudden they're 18 months old. They come home with a pacifier.
Yeah. I like the Nicorette for a pacifier. like
if I could come up with a binky patch, even if it didn't work,
right,
just so people would pay for it, they think they were doing something, I'd be a millionaire.
Well, all you need it to be is just that it's got to be the same material as those new Listerine, like, films that you put in your yep. mouth and they just dissolve. That's all it really is. It's a pacifier that erodes like edible panties. Maybe a bad metaphor, but like analogy, but
I don't know. I'm thinking more like, you know, giving them a little patch of fentanyl to knock them out, and they'll sleep fine.
Yeah.
Perfect. They won't even know what a pacifier is.
They won't care. They'll be so right. happy. My other favorite part of this email where he says, can you tell how my life is going, Justin? Ha. Like, with just a series of his 4 questions. Can you see how fucked I am?
Well, I tell you, a lot of people, they do not realize what it is like having a baby at home. And,
oh, yeah.
Nowadays, they say people have babies, but they don't know how to raise them. They know how to have them.
Yeah.
They don't know how to raise them.
Well, so. And it's really is, and I know you and I have talked about this too, because I'm really getting on this kind of high horse about this idea that the more and more I do this parenting thing, the more and more it just blows my mind that there isn't any kind of child development education in a high school situation. Like, that isn't an elective, that isn't anything that is offered, and it's a simple thing to install, like, because obviously you can't get into do I spank or not spank, but I think what you can do is present both sides of the argument and let the student decide what they will do with their children, because everybody's kind of okay with that, and everybody's going to have their own agenda about formula or breastfeeding and all that stuff. But if you give the information out there so that they have, and I think if you tell them what we know about child development, you know, now, then everybody, like, if you, nobody, everybody should walk out of high school saying a baby starts teething at about 2.5 months, like what you told me. Like, that's when right. the signs start, and these are the basic signs of teething, and really all you need to do is make sure the baby has this much food. Like, that should be common fucking knowledge, because right. if you have that as common fucking knowledge, like you have multiplication tables, then I think that's going to naturally wire people to be more connected to their kids, and then crime rates drop, and the world is a better place because everybody listened to me.
That's right. And yeah. and they start teaching that, though, then the grades on the mastery tests are going to go down, and no child will – every child will be left behind, I guess. I don't know.
That's true.
They should have an app. What they should do is have a phone app that, you know, screams every hour and a half overnight.
Oh.
You know, just screams, and if you got to, like, click it 100 – you don't know how many times you got to click it yeah. to make it stop crying, but you just sit there for an hour clicking and clicking and clicking, and finally it stops screaming. Then you go back to sleep, and an hour and a half later, it starts screaming again. And it might take 5 minutes for you. You never know. This yeah. time it could take 5 minutes, but the next time it might take an hour and a half. And this is what your life is going to be like for the first 2 months of having a baby.
Wow. Very well put. Wow. That's – because I have a joke in my act where I've been talking about that – we need a simulator that, and you've yes. just created a simulator that if we had a simulator that honestly recreated what it was like, that we would have half as many people on this planet, that people could just run through in a weekend or a week or whatever and get a little taste, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, no, I don't need to do that.
That's
just
right.
for the people. I'm talking about the swing boat.
The phone just shits, you know, like yeah. like it cries for a while, and then it also has like the phone shits, and then you got to spend a half an hour cleaning up the phone, and yeah. then it shits again, and I don't know, something like that.
Right? No, I think you're right now. That it could shit in a sense where it moves all your apps, and there's like some kind of puzzle mini game that you have to do to have access to your phone again.
There
I think
you
that's
go.
Yeah. I think that's
an awesome idea.
Yeah. Like, so you, again, there's another level of hours that you don't know how long it's going to take, but it depends on your level of commitment. Like, you could let your phone sit there with shit all over it, but right. and then there's a certain amount of time that passes, and then it develops a rash. So then now there's a second mini game that you have to do that,
then
of
you
course,
have to apply cream.
Right. It's sponsored by either Desitin or Aquaphor. They bring in some money. I'm going to be so pissed if some Danish company that also owns Angry Birds makes this thing.
I know. It would be a good one. I mean, right? they've got those bake shop ones and the pizza shop ones.
Yeah.
Why don't we have a try to raise a newborn
yeah.
app?
Figure
yeah,
that out.
Could be good. Yeah.
We'll call it Have a Baby, Asshole, or Smart Ass. I think that's a good one, too.
So you want to have a baby, asshole.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I'm so in love with you, Dr. J. Our next question it comes from, could you ask him about thyroid disorder in children? This comes to us from Facebook.
All right. I'm pretty sure that in all of our 50 states, newborns get screened for thyroid disorders. I know in Connecticut, it's part of our newborn screen, and I think it's one of the three that are required in all the states. So at birth, all babies are screened for low thyroid, and we've picked up, you know, maybe two or three kids in 20 years that have had low thyroid at birth. It's not something that kids, you know, it's not a real common thing in young kids unless they're born with congenital low thyroid. Mm-hmm. But I do pick up a lot of teenagers, you know, girls and boys that may have low active thyroids, and you know, they usually show a growth pattern where they just, you know, thyroid hormone is one of the growth hormones, so that you'll see kids will get you know, chubbier quicker. When you put them on the growth curve, they gain more weight than you would expect them to gain and less height than you would expect them to gain. So it sometimes raises some red flags. And certainly if there's a family history, if there's a mother, grandmother that has thyroid, it increases the risk that the kids can develop thyroid problems. And it can go along with other things too. A lot of times kids who develop diabetes will also have a low thyroid as well. Kids with Down syndrome often will develop low thyroid too as they get a little bit older. But most kids are going to be picked up at birth if there's a problem. Otherwise, it gets picked up, you know, by the growth curve and just suspicions that they're not growing as well as they're supposed to.
And is that what it is? Because I know my mom recently says I have a thyroid disorder. Like, that's a new thing. And so she says that she doesn't metabolize food in the right way or something. And
it's true. I mean, and it is responsible for that. A lot of, you know, women who develop thyroid will put on, you know, extra weight mm-hmm. because their metabolism goes down. And all they have to do is, if it's a low thyroid, take the thyroid supplement pills and it makes everything normal. Mm. So, and then, you also have too much thyroid hormone in kids where they start metabolizing things too quick and their heart rate can go up and things like that. So that's the other extreme. And I've only seen that a couple of times in kids that I've taken care of too.
So what you're saying is that, like, say his example, I know he doesn't give it here, but his example is like, hey, my kid doesn't seem to be, metabolizing either food fast enough or it's going too fast or whatever. And he thinks it's a thyroid disorder. Then it's something that would have been caught at birth through the screening
process.
If it was
something they were born with, but they can acquire it later on, okay. Although it's not common in young kids. It's more common in older kids.
Like, preteens, like 8,
yeah,
10,
that
like around
age
there?
And that age and up.
Okay. All right. And then our final question says, Justin, this is great. Love that you have Dr. J join you. This time ask how he feels about solids for infants because there are so many conflicting viewpoints nowadays. And I didn't know this was a real thing.
A lot of people, I think the American Academy of Pediatrics actually recommends that people hold off on solids until 6 months of age now. And, I've always been a realistic pediatrician and I know what parents crave for, and that is sleep. So, again, as I said earlier, it's kind of like a weight thing, and a baby who is 14 pounds in 4 months isn't going to sleep 6-hour, 8-hour stretches at night without a little food in their belly. So I usually will start some solid foods at 4 months of age simply because, they need a little something more in their belly, at least at dinner time, mm-hmm. so that they can sleep longer stretches at night. I mean, by 4 months, the parents are entitled to a decent night
right.
of sleep.
You've
and
paid your
you'll
dues.
See kids that will, at 3 months of age, be sleeping 8-hour stretches at night. And then all of a sudden by 4 months of age, they're back to being up every 2 to 3 hours again. And that's just hunger. So, I think if you have a 12-pound 14-month-old, 12-pound 4-month-old, sorry, you can wait till 6 months. But if you've got a kid who's over 14 pounds at 4 months, it's going to be hard to make it another 2 months without trying a little solid food.
Wow.
And, some of the theories are, it increases allergies and stuff. But honestly, we're not introducing foods that are highly allergic. I mean, we're doing bananas and squash and sweet potatoes and carrots and applesauce. And, not many people are allergic to those things. It's not like we're, giving them chocolate cake at 4 months of age. So.
Or peanut butter.
Right, peanut butter.
Shrimp, lobster, shellfish, all that stuff.
Peanut butter covered lobster.
Oh, that would be such a great baby food. I would just love to put that. That would be a great TV bit if we had our own late night show about being parents, just to put right next to Gerber, all natural peanut butter covered lobster tail.
There you go.
with a side of strawberries and
watch your baby sweat and a little Benadryl chaser.
Yeah, just call it a hyper allergy pack. You know how they have those mixed nuts things that are good for heart health, or the
salt and
beach diet. Yeah. So this one is the hyper allergenic baby food pack, and just nail them all, just bang it all out. Is that really their only concern? Is that they think it could introduce allergies where before there would be none, or?
I think that's what the theory is, but to me, you got to try the foods eventually at some point, and I think they would react to them just as much at 4 months as they would at 6 months.
Yeah.
So, again, my goal is good kid health and parents who are well rested. That's my goal in life.
Because I think those are two things that can kind of better each other. Like if you're well rested as a parent, you're better aware and able to take better care of your child.
And then I have parents that want to make their own baby foods and stuff. And I tell them, that's fine, but it takes you away from doing other things with the baby that you would be doing. If you're, if you're spending all day making sweet potatoes for the baby, you're not interacting with the baby. And Gerber and Beechnut have done a good job of just putting it in a jar for you.
Yeah.
So,
we've talked about it on the show a long time ago. I did an episode with my wife where our friends were planning on making their own baby food, and they were under the understanding that there were preservatives in the Gerber food. And there isn't. It's just peas and some water.
Peas and water.
That's it. So if you read the ingredients, and I go, and it's just funny. And what I was really trying to talk about when we were doing that on this episode was that it's just interesting that parents are so naturally tended towards fear of something bad happening to their child. Like the inclination, without even investigating, is that, well, somebody is making something that is trying to harm my child, especially if it is a product intended for my child. Like Gerber has had a 100-year history of making baby food, and their intent is to harm my child. That's what they would like to do. And I can relate to it, definitely. And it was just funny. We had a mom who actually argued that she said that she liked to make the baby food because Natalie was like, you know, this mom wrote in and said, I like to do it. And Natalie was like, well, how many kids do you have? Because if you have one kid, she's like, sure, this is my wife. And she was like, but if you got two kids, you know, come on, you're not doing that. And the lady did write in. I think she admitted that she had one child, but she liked to make her own baby food in the same way she liked to prepare a nice meal for her husband. It was just another thing she liked to do. But yeah. So you're saying, and that's, here's the thing too, that I think is that these people, the American Association of Pediatrics, is that right? Is that what you just called
American Academy?
American Academy. Sorry. They have to come up with like these kind of blankets that are more like generalities, but there's always going to be anomalies within all generalities. And so that's where it's hard for them to say, well, this is the time frame that you should do it, because like they can't get into the specifics like what you just did, that it's like, well, okay, well, say your 4-month old is 14 pounds, then yeah, you're going to be fine. Go for it. Go sick, because the kid's growing really fast and metabolizing, and he's going to need some more calories in his diet, or maybe he's on the lighter side or whatever that is. Like they can't really account for
that. No one size fits all.
Yeah, exactly. That's so very interesting. Well, that concludes all of our questions, and we're almost out of time, but I did want to share with you a little story of something that happened to me since we last recorded. Did I tell you about my son and his rock situation? Have I discussed that with you?
No.
Do you have time real quick?
Absolutely. Like, I'd love to hear about the rock situation.
Dr. J, it was because you have a joke in your act when you do stand up about a kid having a little piece of poop stuck in his butt or whatever, and how you just have to pull it out, and there's all these fears that are associated with the parents and everything. And so I got a call from my preschool. Just sitting there, my second son had just woken up, and we're just chilling, playing, and then I get a call, and the preschool never calls me. I go, hey, what's up? She goes, well, I'm sorry if I don't want to alarm you, but Jacob swallowed a rock.
Okay.
So I go, awesome. I said, okay. And now what I know of
Jake. Did he use water to wash it down?
Yeah, exactly.
Or it just went down on its own?
And so
all it takes is a rock in the mouth and someone to slap you on the back, and that sucker goes down like nobody's business.
It's so weird and so funny to me, because.
Was it a rock or a pebble, Justin? Be honest.
Well, it gets better, because I go, okay. And Jacob has the worst gag reflex in the world. I mean, God help him. He's got to be straight, because if he's not. Whatever dude falls in love with him really loves him for him, because there is going to be no pleasure for that man in that relationship at all. My son, you know, unless the reflex is completely disregarded when it comes to cock. If it's that, then he'll be fine. Like that's the only thing it could squelch.
They learn to breathe through their nose.
Exactly.
It's okay.
So anyway, I'm like, how did he swallow this thing? Like that's just so uncharacteristic of him. So I go down there, and they're really cool about it. They have an example rock, and it's one of those polished glass rocks. In fact, I'll post it on the Facebook page for our listeners.
That would be awesome.
Because I have I have the rock now. This was
you got it.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, I don't want to rush the story, but go on.
No, you're fine. So I go there, and what they described a rock that if you were to give you an example. Of like a baby carrot is what they were trying to tell me, that he had swallowed
that
whole. Yeah, they said it was elongated, but it was polished glass, so it was smooth. And he comes home with little rocks that he finds in the playground. Like he's a little bit of a collector, and so he always is putting little rocks he finds in the playground in his pocket, and then I find them in the washing machine, and I really appreciate it. And so I was worried that it was kind of rough and was like, because they said, well, he's saying his throat really hurts. And so I imagine like a really like rough surface.
Kind of.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay. And if it was anything else, like there was one time that my wife didn't know, she thought that He had swallowed a dime, but this is when he was a lot younger.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's just going to shit that out. No, that's,
yeah, dimes are fine. Dimes and pennies are fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Nickels and quarters you got to worry about.
Right.
But dimes and pennies always pass.
Exactly. And I said, and my wife was like, well, we don't know. I got to take him to get an x-ray. And this is where the redneck upbringing comes in. I go, you know what? Just watch him. If he spikes a fever or it gets real sensitive about you touching his stomach, or if that looks to be swollen in any way, and he's got a fever, I go, then we should rush him. I go, but in the meantime, just check his poop until, and she never found it. So I don't think he ever swallowed it. She thinks she missed it and he did swallow it, but blah, blah, blah. So I go to the school and I'm there. They have the example rock and I'm talking to him and he's freaking out. And he's, you know, they're saying that he's having a hard time breathing. Cause he go, well, he's having a hard time breathing. I go, well, why? In my mind, I'm like, well, then why the fuck are you calling me? Like, call an ambulance and get an EMT over there. I'm not going to fucking be able to clear his airway. Are you kidding me? But I realized that what she's trying to say is that he's saying he's having a hard time breathing, but she said that he's crying, and so clearly he can breathe, and he's not, right, doesn't have blue lips or any of that stuff. So I go down there. I go, okay, I'll be there in a minute. I go down there. He's sitting outside, and he's upset, clearly, and I go, are you all right? And he's like, and I go, hey. And I do this thing where I, for whatever reason, it works with this kid. I get him to look me directly in the eye. And I go, you just look right into my eyes. I said, you look at dad. I go, do I look scared right now? And he's like, no. I go, there's nothing to be worried about. You're fine. Okay. Because you can breathe, right? I go, do this. And he did that. I go, you're fine. I go, nothing is going to happen to you. As long as you could breathe, you're golden. So don't even worry about it. We're good here. I go, when dad freaks out, that's when you can freak out. So he kind of calms down a little bit, and then I find out from the teachers that the other kids at his preschool had told him that in order to get the rock out of him, they were going to have to cut his throat open.
Oh, Jesus.
Get the rock out. So the teacher was like, they've been very helpful and stuff. And you could tell there was another interesting element to it, that the teachers were kind of like on eggshells because they didn't know that how I was going to react to it. And I think it's because these poor people, and I'm sure you come across in your profession as well, that – they deal with just psycho crazy parents, and I'm just, yes, super chill. Like, I'm like, whatever, he's alive. Okay, fuck it. Who cares? And so I'm trying to, if they didn't tell me it was long, like a baby carrot, and I would be like, oh, okay. Like, I would probably just like, well, let's see if he shits it out. And I would just sift through his poop with some gloves, or maybe I'd go bareback if I'm feeling dangerous, and just get in there for the real thing. But so I decide, I call my pediatrician and say, hey, by any chance, do you guys have an ultrasound or whatever? Because, you know, I thought maybe if they had any kind of exam that they would need it. And they go, no, you're going to have to go to the ER. And so they said, well, how big is it? And I said, well, they're telling me it's pretty big and it's elongated, but it's a polished glass thing. So I think it's smooth enough. It'll just go right through them. They go, well, to be safe, you should probably take it to the ER. And I know they have to tell me that. And I'm like, ah, fuck. So I take him to the ER. We sit there for 4 hours. It wasn't that bad, and only to find like an ER doctor come feel his abdomen, laugh, and say, okay, well, now we learned our lesson to not swallow rocks. And then he had another lecture, which I was very happy about because it made me feel like I was getting a little more out of my copay.
There you go.
He goes, now we learned the lesson with the mouth. He goes, now the next step here is to really learn to avoid the nose, because that's where it really gets bad. He goes, definitely don't stick anything in your nose, because if that gets jammed in there, that's really hard to get out. He goes, this, we're going to be okay, I think. We're going to be fine. And so he told me he would probably poop it out that night. If not that night, then the next day. So we come home. I had something I had to do that night. I think it was like a show. So my wife had to sift through the first poop. She sends me a text. Still no rock. Which is, of course, everybody listening to this knows that this is the joy of parenting. This is the blessing that you have gotten, is where you have to sift through shit in your toilet with some gloves. And so anyway, so she says no glove. He said if it doesn't, he goes, if it you don't see it in 3 days, he goes, obviously watch him for a fever or any kind of complaints of abdominal pain or cramping. He goes, but after 3 days, bring him back in. We'll do an x-ray or something to see if we can't find it and what's going on in there.
He goes, but glass isn't going to show up on x-ray either. If it's like a glass stone, it's not going to show up.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe he meant, like, he didn't say x-ray. He goes, we'll try and find it or whatever to make sure. So anyway, so then and he said, but more than likely, you're going to see it tonight. If not tonight, then tomorrow at the latest. That's when it'll go through. And I was like, okay. So, of course, the next morning, and this is what I love, too, is that my son, on the way, I forgot this part. We're on our way to the ER, and he's still a little nervous. And I go, what are you afraid of? He goes, I don't know how they're going to get it. I go, son, you're going to poop it out. I go, that's how they're going to get it. I go, they're not going to cut you open. They're not going to go after it. I said, it's just a rock. You're going to poop it out. And he was like, well, I still want to keep it. That was the whole thing, was that this
well,
was,
that's quite a souvenir.
Yeah, he was like, that's a rock that I want to have. Like, he goes, this is, I want
it to be traversed my GI track, yeah. Dad. I want that rock.
So during the poop, Mike, remember I said he has a weak gag reflex. Like sometimes if his little brother has a raunchy diaper and he's nearby, he just starts gagging. Like, go, get away, get away. Like, you know? And so... So then he wants to come and be a part, but both my wife and I know that if we let him watch us sift through his shit, that we're going to have another mess to clean up. Like, he's just going to vomit all over something. So we're keeping him away, and he's uber curious. And so then the second time I go through it, I find the rock. I clean it off with some soap and everything. And I go, Jacob, I got good news. I go, is this the rock you swallowed? And he was like, yeah! He was all happy about it and everything. So now we decided that what we're going to do is we're going to hang on to it. And whenever he meets the love of his life, we're going to use that to make the main stone of whatever engagement ring that it's cost effective, has a story. And also, I think, exemplifies the shittiness that marriage can become. So
it does. And it's a nice gesture to give someone a stone that passed through one's GI tract.
Right.
I think that is if that ain't love, what is?
How many lucky ladies can say that?
No, not many.
I mean, at best, Dr. J, there are some that could say that it's passed through a dog, but I would venture a guess that most of them aren't even aware that that's happened. I think
that's right.
They're like, oh, shit. So I thought you would get a kick out of my, and I was curious, like, what's the weirdest thing that you've had a kid swallow? I don't even know if that's something you could talk about with this HIPAA stuff or whatever, but.
Yeah, I mean, they swallow everything. And some, you know, one thing, and again, the trouble breathing you mentioned, is sometimes kids will swallow something and it doesn't go down the esophagus, but it goes down into the right mainstem bronchus and plugs up the right lung. So that's one of the things that an X-ray will help with, too, if you see like a blockage to, you know, airflow into the lungs. But I've had kids that have had peanuts stuck in the, you know, mainstem bronchus that have had to go down and, you know, have a pulmonologist go down and take it out. And anything could get swallowed. You know, I'm always amazed at quarters. Kids swallow quarters. I mean, they're big. Those are big. And those can be tough coming out. Those won't. Quarters and nickels sometimes have a hard time passing from the stomach into the small intestine, but everything else will. If it's a nickel or a quarter, sometimes a GI doctor has to go down into the stomach and fish it out and pull it out.
Oh, really? So they put the kid under and just go through like a scope down
the throat?
Like
an endoscope and pull it out.
Wow.
So, but no, I've pulled, you mentioned the nose earlier. I had one cruel little three-year-old girl stick a coffee bean up a kid's nose while he was sleeping at daycare. And coffee beans are tough because they're slippery and stuff. But with nose, you know, the one thing with the nose that you can do is have, you know, one parent hold the kid's head and plug up the other nostril, and the other parent swoops down like they're going to give him a kiss and just cover up his lips and blow as fucking hard as you can, and that sucker will shoot across the room.
So you blow into their mouth and
plug up the other nostril.
Yeah.
And then the force of that usually will shoot the object out of the other nostril.
What?
I've saved more kids' trips to the emergency room with that technique.
You really have done that to a kid?
Oh, yeah. I tell the parents to do it while I'm on the phone with them, and you can hear the joy in their voice when the thing shoots across the room. Oh, there it goes! Yeah!
Like some baseball game announcer. It's going! It's
going! And she's leaning in now, and here we go.
Here comes the pitch. Oh, it's a deep line drive. That's awesome. Oh, that's incredible. Oh, I'm so glad I told that story then. That was, and the real reason I brought it up with you with me is because I thought that it might be helpful for a lot of the newer parents that haven't been through this that listen to the show to kind of not freak out. Not that I'm saying that we can obviously legally recommend you not take your kid to the ER if that's the situation, but you can at least have this experience as for your own edification to make your own educated decision to say more than likely the kid will poop it out in a day.
Yeah, and if you give them something to drink and they're able to drink, well, then there's nothing blocking and they're gonna it's gonna push it down and push it through.
Exactly.
So that's usually all we'll do with nickels and quarters. We just have them drink a lot of fluids to push it into the stomach, and then it takes care of it from there.
But I'm right that everybody should resist that urge to give their kid a laxative. Like, they shouldn't try to force the issue.
No, no, that's not. It's gonna come out.
Yeah. Because, well, and I was a little frustrated because I was giving him water because I was like, I know that when our pediatrician, when we switched him over to solid foods and we were afraid that he wasn't pooping as often or enough or whatever, she was like, well, if he ever goes a bunch of days, she goes, just give him some more water because that'll help ease things through or whatever. When I always thought it had to be fiber. And so then I gave him water and he was drinking his water bottle. And I said, she goes, has he had anything to eat or drink since the incident? I go, nothing to eat. I go, but I've been having him drink water. She goes, oh, we should stop him from doing that. And I was like, oh, well, all right. Like, I don't understand why, but
I don't either.
Yeah. And then when I asked the ER doctor, he was like, she goes, just give him lots of fluids. I go, oh, well, the lady at the ER told me not to. He goes, I don't know why.
I don't know.
Yeah. So
I do it.
Just slam some water down him and I'm sure you'll be fine within 12 hours. And that would have saved me $100. Had I already been through this, I would not have paid $100 for that silliness. But
I've had kids stick Barbie shoes up their nose, in their ears, beads in the ears. You look in an ear and you see something that's aquamarine, you know that's not a naturally occurring thing in the body. So you know there's something in there.
Maybe that could be a mini game for our new app that we're going to create, is like a side
being
thing.
Able to pull shit out of kids' ears and blow shit out of their nose.
Well, that would be fun tech, like a mini game within the game. I even like that idea. But what I was thinking is that there's just like a puzzle game that you could play where you see an x-ray of something and you have to decide, is that in the colon of a redneck or a child? Like, you know
what I mean? There you go. Well, if you see more than a couple of coins, then you know it's a redneck. Like, it's a,
yeah, exactly. Is this recreational or child mishap? Is
like a stomach that looks like a bag of change is a redneck.
Richard Gere or kindergartner maybe would be. All right. Well, that has been our show with Dr. J. Don't forget, you can go to justincomedy.com to find all of my stand-up dates. Let's see what's coming up here on the pipe. I'm going to be at Rooster Teeth Feathers May 30th through June 2nd. And then I think I'm going to be in Syracuse, New York. I'm excited for that. Coming to Wise Guys, headlining there for the first time on September 26th through 29th. And all of my other dates are available at justincomedy.com. But the big thing, I want to say a big thank you because a lot of you guys have been making donations and we've had a big increase in paid subscribers. I had somebody tell me that what they didn't like was that it was $2 a month, but they preferred an annual option. So that's also an option that you can kick down $24 for the year. And again, I know I keep saying this like a dead horse, but I think it's because people don't remember by the time they get home. But that would literally change my life if everybody do that. We could make this my job. And also, a new thing, I had it made simply. That's for anybody who's an old school listener. There was an idea that I had to deal with the issue of I would sometimes wake up in the morning, Dr. J, and my wife would give me a kiss, and she would go, I kind of wanted you last night. Which was the worst thing I think a wife could ever say to a husband. That it's like, why is this information being communicated now?
And the moment has passed. Why are you picking it up now?
Exactly. So I had this idea of, you know, the churrascaria, the Brazilian steakhouses, where you have the green coaster and the red coaster. And that's how you let the guy know if you want some filet mignon or, you know, something, some kind of blood sausage. And when it's red, he goes, no, go. So I had the idea of making that a coaster that you could subtly place on your end table. Green on one side, red on the other, and that's how you could go, you know, good for lunch, no go for lunch. And there's multiple ways that you could use this. You could just give it to your wife, and she could put it on her end of the bed, and whenever she's open for business, if you would, then, you know, it could be green, and it's a nice subtle way of communicating that, you know, with, because I think that when you're married, that people don't like the blatancy of it, like you want to fool around, you know what I mean? And you know, there's ways you can have fun with it. You could hide it around the room in his daily routine if you want, or I also
kind of like finding that elf at Christmas.
Exactly. It's elf on the shelf, but dirty is what.
Exactly.
So, the other idea that I like is that you can have two of them and you can almost do it like you're launching. We've seen it in all the submarine movies where you need two keys to launch the nuclear missile. So you have both of them. And if one is green and the other one is red, that's a no go for launch. But if both are green, then you know what's going on. Or you can even go full blown nuts and you could flip it like a coin. And whatever lands up is what you end up doing for that evening. And I'm giving that away to all of our paid subscribers. Here's what I have. I have it in the form of a PDF because it would be antithetical to the cause of trying to raise money for the show if I bought all these coasters and then mailed them to you. But it's a simple PDF that I had our graphic designer make that I can email you no problem. And you can just glue it or whatever to your own coaster at home. And if that blows up, if everybody's like, I love this thing, then of course I will make them
real. You'll get some made.
Yeah, get some made like you would see at a Chili's and all that stuff. So I think that's it. Is there any stand-up dates or anything that you would like to plug, Dr. J?
Not really. I'll be at the Funny Bone in August. The City Steam in Hartford in August, featuring for the first time. Well, not for the first time. The last time I was there, I hosted, and the middle person didn't do as well as they should, so I got to feature the next
right
night.
On. Yeah.
So next time they said, all right, I guess 2013, we're going to bump you up to 30 minutes because you can do it. So yeah. I have that in August. So standuppediatrician.com.
Yeah, please don't do that. And is your you have an album? Is that available on the iTunes or any of that?
It's actually available on flickume.com.
Okay.
FLICKU.ME.
Okay.
So it's flickume.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you again on behalf of my good friend Dr. J. This is Justin Worsham saying, stay frosty.